Okay, we are now on number six, 2436, in regards to Connie Kennedy, DBM. Annalise or Tracy, we take a turn.
Case 2436, the complainant is Noel Musso, the respondent is Connie Kennedy, DBM. On August 11th, 2023, Tiberius, a 10 1/2 year old male German Shepherd, began to seize. Therefore, complainant headed towards respondent's premises for emergency care. On the way, complainant called the premises to alert that she was on her way with the dog. Complainant was advised that they were full and could not see the dog and referred the complainant to an alternate emergency facility. Complainant went to the alternate emergency facility, which was farther from her home. She called the alternate facility and alerted them to her arrival. The dog was in constant status epilepticus, despite complainant administering diazepam directly. Upon arrival, treatment was initiated. However, a short time later, the dog arrested. CPR was performed until complainant asked them to discontinue, and the dog passed away. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded that the board find ARS 322232 number 3 for misrepresentation of services rendered. Failure to have a veterinarian on premises 24 hours a day when advertising that the premises offers 24-hour services. The motion was approved with a vote of 2-1 with Dr. Butler opposed.
Okay. Thank you, Tracy. We have the complainant here. We do not have the respondent, but we have Mr. Stoll.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, come on down.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to address you on behalf of Dr. Kennedy and to provide the following response to the investigative committee's recommendation. On August 11, 2023, the complainant called the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at 5:11 a.m. and inquired about bringing in her dog, Tiberius. As admitted in her complaint, the owner was told that the specialty center was full, could not treat her dog, and she was referred to another emergency facility. Neither Dr. Kennedy nor any other veterinarian at the practice ever saw the complainant's dog, nor did they provide any veterinary services. The owner was referred to another facility because the practice was not in a position to take any more patients at that time. The potential violation cited by the committee is ARS section 322232(3), which concerns a veterinarian's quote-unquote misrepresentation of services rendered. The operative word in that statute, the operative words in that statute are services rendered. The statute was not violated by Dr. Kennedy because no services whatsoever were actually rendered for the complainant's dog. In fact, that's why the owner filed this complaint, because the practice didn't see her dog and didn't render any services, and she was upset at having been referred to another emergency facility. For purposes of the statute, you have to render services first and then misrepresent those services, either verbally or in the medical record, for the statute to be violated. With regard to the practice not having a veterinarian on the premises at the precise moment when the owner called, Dr. Kennedy testified that this was an isolated incident. The practice does everything possible to meet the staffing needs of the emergency facility, even going so far as to fly in veterinarians from out of state. Furthermore, you have a statement from Dr. Robert Moore, who did a study of the practice and concluded that in 2023, they had only 12 shifts out of 1,400 where a veterinarian was not on site. That's a coverage rate of 99.9%. Also, Dr. Moore was actually on call that night, but because it would involve a driving time for him to come in and a possible delay, the quickest way for the owner's pet to be seen was to be referred to another facility. And finally, you're reminded that under the regulation R311-5017, a veterinarian is free to choose whom the veterinarian shall serve. The practice, therefore, had the legal right to decline the complainant's request for services for any reason, including because the practice was fully booked and not staffed adequately to take on additional cases. Instead of taking on a case that they couldn't handle, the practice did the appropriate thing and referred the owner to another facility. If they hadn't made that referral and told the owner to bring her dog in, and there was a significant delay in providing services, the practice might well have another violation for malpractice in not timely addressing an emergency case. But again, the owner or the veterinarian has the regulatory statutory right to choose for whom they can serve, and they were within their legal rights to refer them elsewhere. Finally, since no services were actually rendered, there's no possible misrepresentation of services rendered, so there's no violation of 3222, 323, nor any other statute or regulation, and therefore this complaint should be dismissed with no violation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stoll. I would now like to have the complainants come forward. Noel Russo. Thank you for being here today. I'm so sorry for the loss of your pet, and I love your shirt that you're wearing.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board. And feel free to take your time and take a breather if you need to.
My name is Noel Russo. Just give me a minute.
Yeah, that's fine. Take your time.
I'd like to start off by being able to read this. Thanking you for the opportunity to speak with you today. Serious consideration was given to filing this complaint. I submitted evidence before this meeting, which I hope was reviewed. I have PTSD, and I ask that you forgive me for reading my address to the board, because I want to be thorough and focused. This is really hard without my dog.
Oh.
Sorry. It was his job. My statement to the board is as follows. As you know, I'm a retired veterinary specialty and ER trauma nurse, and I work at a top emergency trauma and specialty hospital in Delaware alongside top veterinarians, and it gives me a deep perspective on this case. Not once in their 23 years, never mind their 99.9% coverage, not once in their 23 years did they violate the law that required them to have a veterinarian on staff as a 24-hour emergency center. On August 11th, at about 0500 hours, my PTSD service dog, Tiberius, was in status epilepticus. Time was of the essence. V-Scott is about 25 to 30 minutes away. I made two calls to V-Scott. They refused to take him because they were full, but that was actually a lie. The receptionist redirected me to another hospital 55 minutes away. I told her that that was a death sentence, and this delay in receiving life-saving measures contributed to his suffering and death. He seized in my lap for 60 minutes until he gave out. We trusted these professionals to be there when Ty needed them the most, and they were not. It is legally and ethically unacceptable, and justice for him means that his death is not in vain and will save other lives. V-Scott failed 24-hour coverage according to credible witnesses and statements made in the committee hearing. The citing of laws or rules is not meant to challenge the board, but rather to assist myself and the board with key violations. This is a case of gross negligence, lack of ethics, false marketing, and a V-Scott playing Russian roulette by blatant disregard of the Arizona statute's 32-2201 number 23, quote, 24-hour services means veterinary services when a veterinarian is on the premises 24 hours a day, end quote. And committing number 10, gross negligence, the practice of veterinary medicine resulting in injury, unnecessary suffering, or death that was caused by carelessness, negligence, or disregard of established principles or practices. They violated statute number 23 by not upholding the conditions of their 24-hour license per 32-2272B number 3, and have acted with gross negligence as defined by number 10. Under 3222.32, unprofessional or dishonorable conduct, number 3, misrepresentation of services rendered, they claimed to offer 24-hour services, and they did not. They did not have an attending in the building as required by law. And that is defined by ARS 44-1522, number A, class 1 misdemeanor under the ACFA. Number 9, false or deceptive or misleading advertising, as defined by ARS 44-1481, A, number 1, class 3 misdemeanor. 11, gross negligence in the practice of veterinary medicine is defined by 2201, number 10. Number 12, violation of the ethics of the profession is defined by the rules of the board in the ABMA principles, section 7B. Number 18, directly or indirectly violating or assisting or abetting the violation of any of the provisions of this chapter, one or more veterinarians are aware that the law has been violated. Why did the attending leave when this shift wasn't covered? How many knew that this was happening regardless of how infrequent? Number 23, cruelty or neglect of animals includes knowingly or negligently killing of an animal in an inhumane manner. B. Scott met this by their gross negligence. The way he died killed him in an inhumane manner. They allowed him to seize until he died by violating 32-2201, number 23. Dr. Dawson, Dr. Alcott, and Dr. Barrett are credible. Dr. Dawson has attested this isn't the first time she's heard of them not having an attending. The approximate 10% of the violations of their duties per the committee is only what we currently know about without further investigation. Additionally, 32-2249, emergency care by a technician, subsection B. In an emergency, a CVT may render care or first aid if the technician is supervised telephonically by a licensed veterinarian or until a licensed veterinarian arrives. Since there was no attending, a technician should have been made aware of the situation and told me to come with him. During that 25 to 30 minute drive, the tech could have contacted the on-call and been told to give the best course of anti-epileptic medications. I would have answered any questions with the on-call or through the tech. I would rather he had died with a B. Scott nurse trying to save him than to watch him seize in my lap until he died. Arizona Administrative Rules, Article 5, Standards of Practice, are 3.11.501, Ethical Standards. ARS 2232, number 12, a veterinarian practicing under a license or permit shall practice according to the following standards of professional ethics as outlined by the ABMA. Section 7B, in emergencies, this is contrary to what he has claimed. In emergencies, veterinarians have an ethical responsibility to provide essential services for animals when necessary to save a life or relieve suffering. Such emergency care may be limited to euthanasia to relieve suffering or stabilize the patient for transport to another source of animal care. The breach of any of the following constitutes grounds for disciplinary action against a veterinary license or permit under 32-2233 and 34. I'm almost done in bonds. Number one, a veterinarian shall show respect for the owner of an animal through courteous verbal or written interchange and considerate treatment. It was disrespectful and unethical to lie to me. They said they were full. They did not say we have no veterinarian in the building. I would have dealt with that situation if that had been the truth in a very different manner than being here. It was disrespectful and unethical to lie to me and fail to provide the care they were obligated to give him under 2201, number 23. You can't render services if you don't have someone there to render them, which is a violation. A responsible veterinarian shall ensure that the veterinary judgment and responsibility of each veterinarian employed is neither influenced nor controlled by the partnership, corporation, or individual to the detriment of an animal. It don't get more detrimental than death. During the committee meeting, Dr. Butler said that if B. Scott is having 10% of the emergencies not covered, that is not so bad. One committee member told Dr. Butler that when you are in the 10%, it matters. Their vets have not held each other accountable, and that led to the death of an animal. Number six, a veterinarian shall ensure that emergency services are consistent with ARS 32-2201 through 33-2296 and the standards of the locality where the emergency services are provided. Again, gross negligence under 32-2201, number 10, and number 23, failure to provide the emergency services for which they hold their license. The remote towns in my area rely on B. Scott to be there 24/7, 365 as advertised. As professionals in this field, we all know people don't generally call first. I did that. I gave them the courtesy. I did what I would have wanted someone to do for me when I was in their position so we could be ready. But people don't generally do that, and we know that that's true. Dr. Alcott stated to my husband and me, he is present with me today, this is not, quote, this is not the standard of practice I expect out of VSCOT. He was, I believe, a managing partner there and now has his own facility, end quote. His after-hours clinic recommended going to VSCOT. After my dog's meningioma removal, he recommended, if there is an emergency, go to VSCOT. It's the closest one, they're open 24 hours. His after-hours clinic voicemail recommends going there. He trusted them, and they failed him too. They played Russian roulette, and Tiberius paid the ultimate price. Unfortunately, the chamber was loaded that morning with the wrong dog and the wrong owner who would stick up for what's right by other animals, so this hopefully never happens to someone else again. And it resulted in the loss of my dog's life. In closing, Gandhi said the greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way its animals are treated. I hold that the more helpless a creature, the more entitled it is to protection by man from the cruelty of man. The decision that you make today will be the message sent out to the public and veterinary professionals alike. We must be held to a higher standard and uphold the laws, rules, and ethics on which they have taken an oath. I have laid out the grounds to move this case forward for investigation under 2233, showing statute violations of 32-2201, number 10, number 23, 32-2232, numbers 3, 9, 11, 12, 18, and 23, 32-2249, and Article 5, R3, 11, 501, numbers 1, 5, and 6. I've asked the board to find censure or issuing a letter of concern insufficient based on at least one dead animal and the extent of the violations.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. I've given you about 10 minutes. So.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But thank you, though, and I understand that this is a...
One quick, real last thing. Is animal health and welfare are at stake. There are police canines that would rely on them to be there when they say, police aren't gonna call and say, my dog's been shot. He wasn't just a pet, he was a service dog. He provides me emotional support. He is was a certified service dog for PTSD. This has spun my entire life out of control. I've listened to so many hours of board hearings and how things work, and I just don't want this to go unnoticed. There's so many factors. It could have been your dog, it could have been a police dog, it could have been, you know, anything absolutely tragic, and 1% is not okay. We took an oath, 100%. That's what the law says, 100%.
Thank you.
Not when we feel like it. I know because I've been there, I lived it. I spent 36 hours on one shift in a hospital because of a nor'easter. We took turns sleeping, the vet didn't leave. We had somebody there. It wasn't right to have somebody not there. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Ms. Frost, you are the lead on this case.
Yes. So, of course, I'm very sorry for the loss of Tiberius. This is a tough one because, yes, the statute that was found or recommended by the committee didn't seem to apply because it is regarding rendered care. I know a lot of the ARS codes, the 44 titles, I'm not familiar with. I don't know that those apply to us. Mark, do the 44, Title 44 ARS codes apply to us?
Well, to the extent that if anybody engages in a violation, whether your absent on professional conduct is violating state law.
I agree very much with what the complaint said, animal health and welfare at stake. This is a very, very big issue in our profession. Staffing in every area of veterinary medicine. I've been doing this 26 years. I would say in the past 4 or 5 years has been really, really, really challenging. I know several of you work in the area where you either staff your practices or work very closely with those that do that. And so where I can absolutely understand and I can put myself a little bit, right, because this Tiberius wasn't mine and I wasn't in the exact situation, but if I were in that situation, the distress that I would feel, I think that part of it, the good thing was, is that there was a phone call made that we knew directly where to go. I have a hard time navigating this one because I live in an area where I work in the only ER from literally central Arizona, the only 24/7 ER, literally from central Arizona all the way to the north part of the state. So we have people that have to drive 5 hours to us and there's no emergency options. In a very similar descriptive state, we've had, you know, patients come for 3 hours, you know, just on the other side of Flag to where we're at. So absolutely understand, and it sits on my heart. The thing that's really, really challenging is to take professionals who their entire careers are making themselves available, and then if somebody isn't holding every other person accountable for not working 36-hour shifts, I can tell you that we've had board cases in front of us where veterinarians work 24 hours, and we've looked at them and said, you can't do that. That's why you made this mistake, you know? And I remember sitting here being like, oh my gosh, I've seen veterinarians have to do that because there was no coverage. And so this is really, really hard position to be in because they did not provide care, so was there a violation? And they provided information to an appropriate practice. Now, then you go to their advertising and marketing and things like that, and if you have a shift not covered, how do you change your entire marketing and presence and things to state that issue? When we have inclement weather, a lot of practices in town in our area will close, right? We have to be there, but you know, we have another facility that has to close. So if somebody showed up there with a pet because it was closest, having an emergency, are those veterinarians that work in that practice or associated with it now in violation, you know? And how do you plan for all of those things because stuff happens? I don't know. Where I'm very sad for the outcome, I just absolutely could not navigate to, and I listened to everything that was said. I couldn't navigate to a violation. And so I'm gonna make a motion so we can talk about this because I can't get there. So I'm gonna make a motion to dismiss with no violation, I would recommend a letter of concern for the communication efforts that were made. Again, because I think full transparency is ideal. And saying we're full, to me, is different than saying, you know, we do not have a veterinarian that can assist your pet. Now, again, that was communicated when the other veterinarian reached out, right? And when the referring veterinarian reached out. But I think those facts matter. So that's my motion.
Okay. We have a motion to dismiss this case and issue a letter of concern. Is there a second?
I'll second. So, I mean, in statute, basically, it says that we need to be able to refer to an emergency facility. And unfortunately, emergency facilities are not end-all be-all. They're always going to be able to handle everything. Just like on the human side, it happens not uncommonly where an ambulance is turned away to be sent to another hospital. So this is just something, unfortunately, that happens, and there's really no way to plan for it. Nothing can happen. I agree with you. It's very hard to cover shifts right now. If someone called out last minute sick, how are you going to deal with that? And now are we automatically going to have a violation because someone called out sick, which is their right based on the job? So this gets into a very, very difficult gray area of, unfortunately, sometimes things happen and you have to have a contingency plan. Contingency plan is not always the best thing in these rural areas. This is something we've dealt with for years, that there's just not always emergency facilities around. And that's, I mean, we see this in the large animal side. We see this in the cows. There's not always someone available because it's just not a big enough demand and you can't be out there surviving somewhere with just a couple shifts a year. So this is just an unfortunate situation, not something we can fully plan around, but I don't see this as an actual violation.
I was really, it was so disappointing, you know, that the receptionist who answered the call had, you know, stated that they were full. Part of me wonders if she was advised to say that so that, you know, that again, then they wouldn't be in trouble for, you know, being staffed, not, you know, without an actual vet on duty. But, you know, sincerely hope that this is a lesson for that person. You know, whether that could have changed the outcome of the pet, of course, we don't really know. But, yeah, saying full versus we don't have a vet here is just very different. But again, I think we, as Mickey stated, we could get into a dicey situation, even with the pet owner stating that they would still be in favor of going to VSCOT, knowing that there's potentially just a technician there providing services. But, you know, and I understand they could be on the phone and, you know, the veterinarian, but that could get us into a whole nother, you know, issue if the outcome didn't turn out, you know, as hoped. So I don't know. This was a tough one, and it's always tough when there's, you know, a loss of a pet. But yeah, I think I was having a hard time too getting behind any sort of, you know, true violation.
Mark, could I ask a question regarding this misrepresentation of services rendered? Is the statute, is that referring to a specific case? Because that, to me, is, if it's services rendered, then a misrepresentation of those services that were rendered, hope I'm making sense here, is, okay, I rendered these services, but now I'm telling you I rendered a different service. That doesn't make any sense to me. Or is it misrepresentation of services rendered in general, not to a specific case, before the fact?
I think the short answer, if I can honestly members of the board to your question, is that it could apply to both situations. You would just have to identify the facts to support the interpretation of that definition, of that phrase, in order to, you know, address the conduct, the concern that the board has over that conduct. It's impossible to draft, you know, perfect language to, you know, cover every scenario, and that's why you have language like that. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so incumbent in your deliberations and discussions to make sure that you articulate, you know, if you are going to find violations, what are the underlying facts to support that interpretation of that provision?
Okay, thank you.
I think in looking at this, for me, I mean, I feel like if it was a misrepresentation, I'd worry more about the pets that may have been there for overnight care and whether their owners knew that a doctor wouldn't be on site. You know what I mean? Like if there were animals on site that were being cared for and they weren't informing people that there wasn't a doctor there, that's totally different than if you turn somebody away because you don't have a doctor there. So that was really the differentiation piece for me. I agree with this owner in that it is the right for people to be able to get care. And I wish that the profession was different, but the profession is facing a lot of unrest right now. And the shortage in veterinarians and the shortage in veterinary technicians that has been proven over and over again, which is why we have 11 new schools coming on board, is a known fact. It is something that we are all dealing with, and to expect veterinarians to work 36 hours or, and I know that that was just an example, but to expect that is why veterinarians are leaving this profession at a faster rate than we can graduate them out of school. So if we're gonna continue to hold these standards, I think we're just gonna make it worse. And we've got to realize there is a shortage, and we can only do what we can do. And ultimately, that sucks. That sucks for everybody in this room who loves animals.
But not even but just in Arizona. This is a worldwide problem.
I get really emotional about it because I feel like that puts the pressure back on the veterinarian, and that is why veterinarians don't want to practice medicine anymore. And that is why veterinarians will now leave the profession, because you're taking somebody who loves animals and went and dedicated their career to doing this, and holding them accountable for something they can't control. And then they get compassion fatigue and they leave. Well, that only makes the problem worse. So I do not feel this clinic was at fault for this. I feel like this is a status of where we are in the profession.
All right, we've had a lot of great discussion.
I agree totally about the stresses that shortage put. But I think in this case, it's how we handle that shortage. And we've heard a lot here. Some handle it much different than others. So for me, it's a specific case more than a generalized problem that I totally agree with. Okay.
All right. So a lot of discussion on this one, another hard case. But we have a motion and a second, again, to dismiss this case against Connie Kennedy and to issue a letter of concern. So if there's no further discussion, let's go ahead and take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, we have one nay. And motion passes, so thank you for being here today. Let's see. Is everybody okay to do maybe one more IAR before we take a break? So we're gonna do number 10, 2443, in regards to Catherine Linden, DVM. And Annalise is gonna read the front load.
Case 2443, complaint is Jennifer McGuire, respondent is Catherine Linden, DVM. On May 16th, Sour Patch, a 19-year-old female domestic short-haired cat was presented to the respondent for limping. On June 1st, 2023, the cat was presented to the respondent for having honey-like urine. Diagnostics were done and an antibiotic was administered. On July 15th, 2023, the cat was presented to the respondent for a glucose check. Glucose was elevated. On July 21st, 2023, the cat was presented to the respondent for a glucose check and diarrhea. Glucose was still elevated. Respondent advised complaint to increase insulin and prescribe metronidazole. Respondent recommended a recheck in 7 days. On August 3rd, 2023, the cat was presented to respondent for a glucose check. Glucose was still elevated, therefore respondent had complaint increased insulin incrementally, then recheck in 1 to 2 weeks. On August 9th, 2023, the cat was presented to an emergency facility for vomiting and neurologic symptoms. Cat was treated and released. On August 10th, 2023, the cat was presented to an emergency facility for seizures. Based on the cat's condition, complaint elected to humanely euthanize. And the committee recommended that there were possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act. And it was moved and seconded by the committee. So ARS 3222-3211, malpractice. Overall inappropriate management of a diabetic case, did not make appropriate treatment recommendations and provide diabetic consultation of what to expect, did not offer proper nutrition for a diabetic patient, and did not recommend further diagnostics, including a glucose curve and or fructosamine. And ARS 3222-3212, as it relates to R311-5013, failure to offer a referral when respondent was not comfortable working up a diabetic case on 6-1-R615-23. ARS 3222-3221, as it relates to R311-502L, L4, failure to document the results of the exam on 6-1-23. L8, failure to document the type of insulin prescribed, and L9, failure to document in the medical record the blood work results on 6-1-23. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Okay. Thank you. We do not have the respondent here, but Mr. Stoll. Yes.
I have a brief statement.
Okay.
Thank you.
Come on.
I am relatively new to this case and had not been retained to represent Dr. Linden when she appeared, when she prepared a response and appeared before the investigative committee in January. Dr. Linden could not be here today, but as I read the statement on her behalf. With regard to the proposed record-keeping omissions, we reviewed them following the investigative committee meeting, and Dr. Linden immediately became concerned that some of the pages of her medical record may not have been included when she submitted her response, and so she resubmitted a complete copy of her medical records, which you all should have. If you review the medical record for June 1st, 2023, the results of Dr. Linden's exam are in fact in the medical record, specifically the TPR is recorded, and under the physical examination heading in the objective section, Dr. Linden recorded bright alert responsive, general appearance that the cat's outer body had an unkempt coat and the ears, eyes, nose, throat were all normal, as were the cat's respiratory, circulatory, lymph nodes, musculoskeletal, abdomen, and other systems were all noted as being normal. So there should be no violation of R311-502L for not documenting the results of the exam on June 1st, 2023. Next, the committee expressed a concern that the type of insulin prescribed was not in the record. It was in fact noted in the medical record. If you look at the communication record for June 2nd, 2020, you see that the type of insulin was recorded as Humulin. Finally, with regard to the last potential record-keeping violation, the lab work results were noted in the medical record, but unfortunately were not included in her original medical record submission. Based upon the foregoing, there should be no medical records violation in this case. With regard to the other proposed violations for failure to refer and mishandling of this case, Dr. Linden perhaps brought this upon herself when she stated in her response that she has never been completely comfortable managing diabetes cases. What she really meant when she said that was that she found these cases challenging and at times frustrating because diabetes is such a dynamic condition and every clinician manages diabetes a little different. In any event, Dr. Linden does not believe that her management of this case fell below the standard of care, and if anything, your actions in this case should be limited to a letter of concern if you have any concerns in that regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. We also have the complainant here, Jennifer McGuire, if you'd like to come forward. Thank you for being here today. I'm so sorry for the loss of your cat. If you'd state your name for the record, and then I can give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Thank you. Again, thanks for having these meetings for people like us to, to address and let you know how we feel. My name is Jennifer McGuire. Sour Patch was, she was crazy. We first got her, when she was 6 weeks old, she was a garage kitten. She was, her mom had her in the garage and we rescued her. She was originally called Lacey, because we had a dog named Cagney for all of you older people that can get that. But very quickly, I had to change her name. She literally embodied that Sour Patch Kid commercial, first they're sour, then they're sweet. She would try to trip me down the stairs and then come over and be like, oh, but I love you, and you're my best friend. And, she only bit me, she didn't give a crap about anybody else in the family. She slept with me, her little head was on my hand every night. She was my unofficial emotional support, everything that I've ever been through, she's been there. She was 19, she had a very good life, but I fully believe that she probably would still be with us if not for the actions of Dr. Linden. I worked at a pharmacy for Humana, so I know a little bit about human stuff. I know with insulin, you're supposed to test more in humans. I don't know if that's different for animals. If I don't know that, you guys can correct me. But literally, she would check her every 2 weeks, and I asked her multiple times. I work, I work from home, so that's great, but I give her the medicine in the morning and the medicine in the evening, right? She said, absolutely. And I said, okay, so when should I bring her in to check? She goes, oh, you can bring her in after work. And I go, okay, but that's a long time from when she had the insulin, and I know that, things can change. So she wasn't concerned. She didn't really express anything at all. And over the course of, the few months that she has records, her insulin was high. Her insulin was high. Her diabetes was high. Everything was high. So give her more. And when the first time that I took her to the emergency vet, they told me that she had a mini stroke because of the high insulin levels. I tried to get a hold of Dr. Linden to ask questions. Nobody ever called me back. Nobody returned a phone call. And then 2 days later, I was at home working, and I started work at 7:30, and I get my first break for 2 hours. So at the 2:30 mark, I went around looking for her, and I found her around the corner in the shoe rack, mid-seizure. I have no idea how long she was like that. I grabbed my roommate's daughter and I said, we need to go I called Dr. Linden's office and let them know, and they offered me a 3:30 appointment. I was like, so she's supposed to seize all day? What are we doing here, you know? And they didn't offer anything. She said, we don't have anything open. You can come in at 3:30 or not. So I took her back to Blue Pearl, who I think should get, you know, accommodations and medals and everything. Everything I hear about them from even these people are just amazing. It took them an hour to get her out of the seizure. And at that point, they were like, well, you can find another bed and start all over. And at that point, I kind of just figured, you know, she's 19, she's been my baby, she's got a good life. And I need to do what's right and just let her go. So I did. Again, I tried to contact Dr. Linden's office. I emailed, I got the office manager's email, never heard anything at all. And then at the preliminary hearing, I find out that she wasn't comfortable. And it just, I don't even know. I mean, I can't be the first cat, you know? And I don't want something like this to happen to somebody else. If she wasn't comfortable, if she wasn't clear, if she wasn't whatever the reason, she could have said something, and she didn't. And then she never even followed up with me. We tested Sour Patch every 2 weeks, her insulin levels, and they're high. Give her more. Give her more, give her more. So basically, she instructed me on how to overdose my cat. And I put her through hell that last week, and that's not fair. That's all I got.
Thank you. We appreciate
Sorry
it.
Sorry for your loss.
Okay, Dr. Nosley, you are the lead on this one.
Thank you. My opinion, and so far the opinion of the investigative committee, that this was a mismanagement of a case of feline diabetes. Spot checks done in this case, or I would say in nearly all cases, they're not reliable for managing a case of diabetes, either initially diagnosed or following up. This patient was hyperthyroid. That's a complicating factor. Glucose curves are the gold standard. I believe they're necessary. And, you know, we can get into the weeds on what happens during a glucose curve to influence your decisions, but I'll just say your decisions are based on what happens in that curve, which is multiple glucose checks over a period of time. And then you make your decisions based on that, not on a spot check. After so many days and after so many hours of insulin without history of eating or when eating or any of those things. The issue in this case, if just looking at what we have, you would be concerned about insulin resistance that could have been present but was not, obviously, because of what happened. Going to the emergency clinic and basically having a zero blood glucose. Insulin resistance, you should be thinking about Somogyi effect, rapid metabolism, insulin antibodies, all these things. Raising the dose of insulin to a very high level under these conditions, 7 units per kilogram, without glucose curves, I characterize this as mismanagement of the case. And there was nothing done. There was no discussion of diet, no discussion of different possible insulins could be used, no discussion of was the client administering the insulin properly, none of those things that are usually done in this case. So I certainly find a violation here, and agree with the investigative committee on the first one, 3222, 3211 malpractice, as we heard that violation. As to the second violation, ARS 3222, 3212, as it relates to R311, 501, failure to offer a referral. Mark or other members of the board, could I ask a quick question? Does that always mean a referral to a specialist? My thought process here is, if it means a specialist and it has been a specialist, then I don't agree with that violation. I would substitute that with 3222, 3212, R311, 501, failure to follow professionally acceptable procedures and use of current professional scientific knowledge for not seeking assistance in managing a diabetic case where insufficient knowledge of diabetes was present, resulting in the death of the patient.
Before we get too far, okay. I have a question for the complainant, based on the complaint. I don't know if you guys read the first paragraph. I just would like some clarification based on the
complaint in the first paragraph.
Yeah, if you read, okay. I don't want to read it into the record or anything, but if you read the first paragraph, I just want to ask questions about that. So, again, I don't want to read your complaint into the record right now, but a bottle of insulin, how long did that last you? I mean, did you go through them pretty quick, or was it a...
I mean, maybe relatively, because she instructed me to, you know, start at a certain dose and then titrate up over a certain amount of, or I guess over the 2 weeks. Okay. So,
would you go through one like every few days, or?
I wouldn't say every few days. I probably, so long ago.
No, I understand.
I remember buying more in between the visits,
okay,
in between the 2 weeks, so give or take.
Okay. The size of syringes, were they the insulin syringes? Were they a larger size syringe, or what size syringes were you using?
As far as I know, they were for the insulin. When I went to Walmart to pick them up, they asked me, obviously, was it for you or is it for something else? And I told them it was for my cat, and they kind of adjusted. So I would assume that they were insulin syringes.
Okay, so were they kind of like a small needle, orange cap on them?
Yes.
Okay. So I said, I don't know the first paragraph, the volume.
U100.
Well, yeah,
yes.
She said mils in here.
Yeah.
So I wanted to verify, yes, just to make sure. Okay.
Sure, 100s, that's what I remember.
No, that's okay, I just wanted to verify and make sure we were good on the right hand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So, and then further violation regarding communication. So I think maybe because I've got several things here, if we could take them one at a time.
Sure.
And then one at a time. So I make a motion to find a violation of 3222, 3211 malpractice as stated. I don't think we have to read it again.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
And then I would make a motion to find a violation under 3222, 3212 as it relates to R311, 501, failure to follow professionally acceptable procedures for not seeking assistance in managing a diabetic case where insufficient knowledge of diabetes was present, resulting in the death of the patient.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I just want to clarify, under 501, what letter number?
One.
Okay.
The section, failure to follow professionally acceptable procedures.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. There's no further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion passes.
And then I would find a violation under 3222, 3212 as it relates to R311, 501, regarding courteous verbal or written interchange and failing to communicate all of the necessary information concerning diabetes mellitus to the owner.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
So, sorry, are you done with your violations? Because
yeah.
I just have a question.
Yeah.
Are you going to do it as a consent agreement?
Because yes.
I just am wondering if, like, if there's additional information that the vet feels would change our course of outcome. Obviously, if she could say, mm-hmm. no, I'm not going to, and it would go to an informal.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I had that very thought also, yes, and
yeah.
unfortunately
yeah, I mean,
she wasn't here or isn't here.
Yes.
So I would make a motion at this point because I think we have all the information we need to offer a consent agreement. And so I would make a motion to offer the respondent a consent agreement accepting the findings of fact. And I'd like to do that separately, findings of fact.
Okay. Second. Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
And then I would make a motion to accept the modified conclusions of law, as we've just stated here.
Okay. Motion and a second?
Second.
Okay. Sorry. Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
I'd like to ask if there have been any previous violations or sanctions, etc.
Just one in 1999. There was a consent agreement with civil penalty for failure to change address in a timely fashion.
Okay. So I'd make a motion to offer consent agreement to include a period of probation of 1 year to obtain 8 hours of CE in the areas of 4 hours in diabetes mellitus management treatment, 2 hours in medical record keeping, and 2 hours in client communication. And I'm having to rethink that right now because of the medical records. It was unfortunate that we got revisions at this late date.
Yes.
So it was hard to review those in detail. And since none of my motions included medical records keeping.
Did we actually get the blood work? I don't know if I ever saw the blood work.
We're getting it now for some reason. We're getting
yeah, I still have never seen my blood work.
Yeah. So.
So, I mean, as far as I'm aware, it's never been submitted.
Yeah, I'd have to find another violation regards to medical record keeping.
Right.
Yeah.
I'd be in favor of, I mean, she clearly needs some assistance in diabetes, so
I agree.
If you want to load that up some more or, you know.
Oh, and diabetes. What about records? What are thoughts on records here?
How late was the initial information?
I haven't.
It was after the IC.
We got some clarifications today.
After today,
I haven't read anything.
I mean,
today.
So
did we get corrected records, or was that just based on what the attorney said?
Yeah, what the attorney said.
I mean, we didn't get any corrected records, Victoria?
No, we did.
We did.
Yeah, no, we did. They're in there.
They're in there now.
Yes,
okay. Did you get a chance to look at them?
I think it goes back to the managing of the case. So if you don't manage a case well, you can't document it well. So
correct.
I think that ultimately what you're getting at is, of course, it's not documented well if we didn't understand where we were going, right? So
right.
I mean, I don't know if you really have to go into the record keeping part as much.
All right.
You document what you have.
So can I back up and make one more motion?
No.
Okay. Nikki, do you have the motion on? Do you know the statute on the medical records? I don't have that.
I think you want
to make one on that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think the medical records would be hard to make a motion on if we haven't had a chance to review what's been submitted.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah.
So I kind of feel like we need to take the time to do it later and review what has been submitted, or we need to say the medical records are not going to be adequate because the case management was not adequate. I don't know that there's a record keeping violation. You don't know if it's necessary. Exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's
right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm
submitted in a timely fashion.
That.
Well, again, here's the deal. Obviously we heard from the attorney for her response, but what she said through that response was,
when I was listening to the IC, oh my gosh, I don't think all my records made it. Now, that's a common thing with the digital records. You click the wrong thing and you only get part of it. You got to go back and click three more boxes to get your entire record. It happens a lot. This is not the first time we've seen this.
Sure.
You know, and again, even when we do these types of records where they have to transcribe them, you know, you still got to copy all the pages and send it in. So that appears all to be there. And so looking at it, yes, all the information's there, but it's not going to look adequate because you're saying
because of the case management.
Exactly. So I don't think that there was a violation in the records.
I agree. Okay. I agree with that point. So we'll leave it as it stands. So 4 hours in diabetes mellitus treatment and management, 4 hours in client communications.
Now, just to bring up one more point.
Okay.
Because of the new statutes that are handed down to us from the legislature, she does ask about reimbursement in there. Is that something we want
that
to address?
That was in her.
Oh, yes, you are correct.
Complaint.
Yeah. So this is the time, correct, Mark, since we found violations.
And so we do that as a motion in the consent agreement.
Yes, it would be part of the terms of probation.
Okay.
Dr. Ray, specific.
Thank you for remembering that.
Yeah, no problem. Here it says, again, about $1,000. I mean, I don't know where we can go about with this. If there's whether receipts, I didn't see receipt anywhere here.
We did.
I mean, you could say just she should be reimbursed for the last, well, for the examinations and treatment on X date, X date, and X date. Because,
oh.
I mean, we could figure out what that was.
Yeah.
Would that be adequate? So, yeah.
Can we do it that way? Okay. So I need to back up, add another motion. I would make a motion. And is this cite a specific statute?
Well, you have the authority in your statutes to make that part of your disciplinary order is the reimbursement.
Okay,
so it's not.
So
a,
it's more of an order.
Yes, it's part of the discipline.
Violation.
The terms of probation.
So I would add the order to reimburse under the dates of treatment to reimburse the complainant those amounts.
And do you want to specify though the dates of treatment?
Oh yeah.
Looks like so we came in for the limp on 5/16. I don't think it was
mentioned
urinary at that point.
It was honey like urine on June 1st. So June 1st, the 15th, the 21st. And August 3rd, those four were all related to glucose checks.
Right.
So reimbursement for those
four.
The additional services ones were at the emergency clinic, and I don't know that we can actually go there.
That's more civil litigation, right?
So.
Yeah, we can't order her to reimburse for the emergency clinic. Kind of like to. So adding that order.
And did you want to put a time frame in?
For the reimbursement? 90 days?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be, can it be on or before the end of the probationary period?
Yeah. It's,
okay, on or before the end of the probationary period. Okay. Makes sense. And then, so no civil penalty. And if not accepted in 30 days, we would move to informal.
Let me clarify something on that, Tracy, the probationary period being a year, so that the doctor could wait a year to reimburse the client?
That's up to you. That's normal how you do the civil penalties.
I agree with
really
civil penalties, because that's just going to our one. But
this
somebody's out money that they paid for these services. I feel like a year is way too long.
Yeah.
Sorry, I feel like we need to keep the probationary
go back to the 90 days.
Let me admit
and go back
that
to the
and go back to the 90 days
and I'll
under that order.
And I'll second that.
Okay. All right. Are we good there now?
Can we just have another vote on that motion?
Yes.
Now?
Yes. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Done with that. Thank you for being here. We are behind on our schedule, but we're going to try and catch up. So let's take a quick break, and then we can meet.
Thanks for catching.